The 2022 NFL draft is right here. Let's talk about it a bunch. He's part of the Outstanding Believe Network. He hosts NFL Draft Prospects Podcast. He's an analyst for Rise and Draft Scouting online, riseanddraft.com. It's also his Twitter handle. Welcome in, Ryan Roberts. Ryan, appreciate you finding some time so close to the draft. How's life treating you and the family?
Oh, man, it's all good. It's draft week, and I'm happy that I can actually have a real New Jersey guy on today. Joe's really a California guy, man. He doesn't count.
All right. I'm going to give you that one, especially because I know he can't hear me right now. let's start with a very general question that I saw you retreat from the Rise and Draft site, because it's accurate. You know, last year we've seen with Lawrence, other years Burrow, Kyler Murray, not a lot of mystery at the top of the draft. I feel like this year we have more leans than locks. So is it kind of fun to embrace the more unpredictable nature of this draft?
Yeah, I mean, I love it personally, you know, from someone that follows it, because this draft is built upon depth, and this is built upon a high volume of players. And I kind of like the parity in a sense where, you know, anybody could go at any different spot. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think, are viciously trying to trade out of the number one spot. But if they're stuck there, I think they're honestly are, you know, kind of considering four different players. Like, I don't think there's a lock right now at the top or just in general right now. Like, we don't really know what to expect. So from my perspective, I absolutely love it. From the fans' perspective, I feel like it's kind of turned people off a little bit this year. You know, there's not a lot of quarterbacks to get excited about at the top of the class. It's not a great top of the class just in general, and there's not really a pure understanding of what to expect early on. So I think average fans don't really enjoy it too much. But for me, a guy that, you know, has, you know, a pretty good understanding of a lot of players in this draft, I'm excited to just see where everyone lands, because I just think you can go so many different ways, and things can go sideways really quickly in this one.
Yeah, you know, and obviously it's become so quarterback-centric. I mean, you go back to Peyton in 98, I think five times it's been another position, and it's always been a rush end or an offensive tackle. You know, this class ain't going to remind anybody of Elway, Kelly, and Marino. But so what's your read on the quarterbacks? Who do you think will be the first off the board, and where might he land?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Malik Willis out of Liberty. I know there's been a lot of talking point about, you know, can he pick it out of Pittsburgh, but I think that someone's going to fall in love with the tools that Malik Willis has, because I think that Kenny Pickett has a really solid floor to being, you know, at least a really good backup to maybe a starter in certain situations. But I think Malik Willis, if you harness everything that he has, can be a starting quarterback for a team for the foreseeable future. He's got a great arm, really good athlete. It's easy to like him, but I don't think it's very easy to love him. Like, I think that it is extremely difficult to fully buy in, because the accuracy issues kind of combined with the fact that he's coming from a system that just did not ask him to do much past, you know, just kind of RPO concepts for the most part. There's a troubling outlook for him early on, especially in his career. So if he lands with a team where good infrastructure, good coaching staff, a plan in place for him, then I'll buy into kind of the fit long term. But unfortunately, he's in a class where there's not a quarterback at top. He's a, in a typical year, he's a developmental guy that might go early second round. Maybe he's squeezed into the back end of the first, so you have the 5-year control of him. But I think he's going to go top 10. I think that the clock starts at number 6 to Carolina. I think number 8 to Atlanta makes some sense too. He's a Georgia guy originally, so I think there's going to be some intrigue there if he lasts that long. And then 9 to Seattle, I think, is another spot. And I wouldn't even count out if the Steelers really like him and he makes it to, let's say, 9. If the Seahawks want to kind of recoup some capital and they want to trade up with the Steelers at pick 20, I wouldn't count that out. But either way, no matter how you slice it, of which team ends up getting him, I don't think he gets out of the top 10, because I think there is legitimate intrigue around the league.
Talking NFL Draft, Ryan Roberts, the Believe Network, your host of the Believe in NFL Draft Prospects. You know, you did something I love, you know, the under-the-radar guys. I have family who are really big Wisconsin fans, and you listed a guy who was the leader of one of the best defenses around, Leo Chenal, who just had a monster breakout season. His numbers were crazy, and he missed two games. What do you like about this guy and where he might go?
Well, I'll tell you this, man. It's pretty easy to like Leo Chenal because he brings a really awesome baseline to begin with. Like, and I feel like it honestly kind of morphs your perception of him, because you look at him, you're like, okay, this kid is 250 pounds. He played near 255, 260 at Wisconsin. He kind of fits the old traditional mold of a, you know, a pure inside backer who's a, you know, downhill thumper, right? And he fits that mold because he's incredible at the line of scrimmage, stacks and sheds at the point of attack, gets off of blocks, and he's a great run defender, one of the better run defending linebackers I've probably ever evaluated. But then you take a look at some of the other stuff he does, and as soon as I saw him blitz a couple times, I think it was in the Iowa game, maybe it was the Purdue game, the closing burst that this kid had is different. Like, it's not ordinary. And then he goes to the combine, he runs 4.53 at 250 pounds, vertical's 40 and a half inches, and not to mention, I interviewed him after that, and he was like, oh, I was disappointed. I was doing 42 in my pre-draft stuff. I'm like, oh, okay, you're actually a freak here, man. Like, you weren't made on this planet. So he has every tool, I think, in the book, right? Like, people, again, are kind of looking at him. They're like, oh, a white linebacker from Wisconsin, he's just a downhill dude, like I kind of said before. But I think there's upside in pass coverage. It's just something that Jim Leonard didn't ask him to do, because on top of being a dynamic run defender, he's also one of the best interior blitzers I've ever seen, like evaluated anyway. You know, A-gap, B-gap blitzer. I mean, the guy had like 8 sacks in 11 games on top of 110-plus tackles and 18 tackles for loss. It was just an absurd season. So there's no reason to think at this size profile combined with that athleticism that he can't be at least solid in pass coverage. I don't think he's ever going to be a man-to-man cover linebacker, right? Like, I don't think he's going to be locked up against tight ends. But I think that he can at least be a zone dropper. Like, just get to a spot, close some windows, you're good to go. So I'm a big fan of him. I think he's a top 20 player in this class. I really do. He's probably not going to go until somewhere on day two, probably second or third round. But I think that someone's going to get a face of their defense. And I am enamored with this player. I think that he's one of the better linebackers I've ever evaluated.
Definitely something to look forward to. And, of course, here in Eugene, Kayvon Thibodeau is going to go round one. 2013, Deion Jordan became the highest Duck defender ever in a draft at 3. You know, we've heard this doesn't love football, but as a Giants fan, if he's there at 5 or 7, I'm going to be like, I'm going to just whine a lot on Twitter if they don't pick him. But so what's your read on KT's status and where he might land?
He's a really tough one to figure out because, I mean, first and foremost, the whole doesn't love football thing, doesn't play hard, I just think it's so ridiculous, man. Like, every single year we have this overanalyzation of a player. I mean, we did the same thing. People don't remember this, but when Myles Garrett was coming out of Texas A&M, he was a similar dude where, like, he openly talked about other interests outside of football, and then he got this, like, perceived notion that, like, you also don't like football, and it's very ridiculous every single year, especially when you talk about Kayvon Thibodeau. You're trying to make that transcend onto the football field, and I don't see plays that he takes off, honestly. Like, the first time I watched him, I'm just like, he's a better run defender than pass rusher right now because he plays with incredible effort in the run game, and he's winning as a pass rusher just off the tools. Like, there's no nuance to him at all. He is just an athlete being an athlete, right? So I really like Kayvon Thibodeau. He's a top 3 player in this class to me. I would consider him taking number 1 overall. I think we're going to come full circle with this one because there's a lot of talk that, hey, he could be available 8, 10, whatever it is, like lower in the top 10. I think that there's a legitimate chance he goes 2 or 3, either the Detroit Lions or the Houston Texans. I still think that it's on the table. I think we might go full circle with this one with Steve. Like, you know, he was the guy, been the guy for multiple years. We're overanalyzing him a little bit. We're questioning his love for football. Oh, he's dropping. And then people are kind of doing a 180 now and saying, like, oh, maybe that was kind of just, you know, some media talk. So I still think he's going to go very high. I think he could go 2 or 3. I think he's the best pure defensive end in this draft and has an untapped upside. Like, this kid is 6'4", 250-plus, 34-inch arms, ran in the 4.5s. And, again, all the production he had at Oregon was him being an athlete. I think once you get him with a really good defensive line coach, he's a double-digit sack guy every single year. So I'm a big fan of KT, and I think that he's going to do really well in the NFL.
Good call, especially playing to the Eugene audience. No, I know you had him 1 on your mock in late March. And, of course, here with Justin Herbert, now a big-time player, the bandwagon of Charger fans in this town has filled. And, by the way, I've climbed aboard. But, you know, they go 17th, more protection for Justin. They didn't really get after the pass rusher, despite having Nick Bosa. Ryan, when you're looking at the Bolts, what holes exist and who might fill them?
Yeah, I think that they're a really interesting team because there's not a ton of holes, man. Like, this Chargers team set up pretty well for the future. I think right tackle is an obvious one. Obviously that offensive line now with Rashawn Slater and Corey Lindsley, and it's a really good group now. But you can always I think, upgrade the right tackle position. I wouldn't count out a wide receiver. It's a little bit off the wall because I know they have Mike Williams. I know they have Keenan Allen, but if there's a guy like a Jameson Williams, for instance, that's sitting there at Alabama that brings a dynamic speed element that you don't really have on that offense, I wouldn't question that decision just because I don't think there's a lot of holes. So when you don't have a lot of holes, that's where luxury picks kind of come into effect. So right tackle, wide receiver. Defensively, I think that you can upgrade the linebacker position a little bit. You know, I like Drew Tranquil, but he's been hurt a ton. I know Kaiser White left this offseason, not with the Philadelphia Eagles. So that's always a spot, but I mean, safety's good with Derwin James, obviously. You got corners now with J.C. Jackson coming over and Asante Samuel Jr. last year. So I really do think that it's an offensive player. I think right tackle or wide receiver make a ton of sense. I would prefer wide receiver for them just because I don't know if there's going to be an offensive tackle with 17 that I would, in a vacuum, like that in that spot. Like, you're probably going to get a Trevor Penning who – I like Trevor Penning. I had a second-round grade on him, but, like, 17 is just too high for me. Like, it just really is. So – if you're sticking there at 17, if you're not a trade-back candidate, maybe you are, and then you take Trevor Penning a little later in the first round, which I would be okay with. I would probably target somebody like a Jameson Williams, maybe a Chris Olave, a wide receiver that I think brings a little bit of a dynamic element to the offense that is missing. Because I think Keenan Allen is obviously one of the better route runners in the league. Mike Williams kind of has that big body, vertical, 50-50 ball type of profile, but a guy that can really uncover deep with the deep ball prowess of a Justin Herbert. I think wide receiver is a sneaky option for the Los Angeles Chargers. Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah, between the San Diego Chargers, the Las Vegas Raiders, I get confused all the time. A couple final thoughts for Ryan Roberts, RiseAndDraft.com online. Selfishly, I'm concerned about the Giants, though I do like the hires of the Buffalo duet of Joe Schoen, Brian Daboll. But you're talking about a franchise whose last playoff win was when they beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So protection for Daniel Jones, leading sack guy, was a rookie with just 8. What are you thinking? The Giants go 5-7. What makes sense?
Yeah, I think you mentioned one of the biggest possibilities for me, and I think it would be a home run, is if Kayvon Thibodeau is sitting there at 5 and he's staring you in the face, man. Like, I think that it's a run the card in type of situation. I think he's a fantastic football player. I think that he also is a very different pass rusher than Azeez Ojulari, who had a nice year for them last year. He's kind of an undersized, more stand-up rusher, though. Getting a guy like a Kayvon Thibodeau who can also do some stand-up stuff, but like, he can also put his hand in the dirt and he can really get after the passer. I like that combination. So if you get a pass rusher like him that's still on the board, I would hope that at 7, best offensive tackle might still be available, whether it is, you know, obviously there's going to be a run a little earlier, but hopefully only 2 out of 3 are off the board. I might gamble a little bit and just say, like, hey, we're going to just see what happens at 7. Because if a Charles Cross, for instance, who for Mississippi State, who I'm a big fan of, and I know you only played left tackle at Mississippi State, and you don't really necessarily want to move Andrew Thomas over to right tackle. Maybe just move Charles Cross over to right tackle, whatever that situation might be. I've heard that the NFL might not be quite as high as some of the media is as far as mock drafts. So some people have him going like top 5 at 6, and some people have say the floor is Carolina at 6. And like, it could be, but I think that there's an opportunity that Charles Cross might be there at 7. So if you come out of this draft with Kayvon Thibodeau and Charles Cross, I think it's a home run. The only other way I would go with it is if you want to secure your offensive tackle and not play with fire, then you take your offensive tackle at 5, and then you either play the game that Thibodeau falls to 7, or you go Kyle Hamilton out of Notre Dame to safety, because I think that it's not necessarily a massive need, but if you're not going to improve the pass rush to the degree that you want with that pick, at least you can get a safety on the back end to combine with Xavier McKinney, where you could play a lot of two high shells, you could rotate, you could be creative, and that's the best way. Like, if you can't upgrade the pass rush early on in the first round, if you upgrade the secondary, at least you give yourself a shot.
Well, if the Giants get Thibodeau, I guess I got to spring for the $200 for a jersey. But the last thing, as a South Jersey guy, I know you're an Eagles fan. Just a wild stretch run last year, season one under Coach Sirianni, made the wild card. They have the Dolphins pick at 15, the trade with the Saints. They go 18. They got a young secondary, kind of after Darius Slay. They put no pressure on the pocket last year. What's your read on what your Eagles might do in round one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Eagles, like you said, I mean, they got Hassan Reddick, obviously, this offseason, stand-up rusher. He's had double-digit sack seasons the last 2 years, so he's a good football player. But the other defensive end, I mean, they got Derek Barnett back on a two-year deal. I mean, he had more penalties last year than he did sacks, so I'm not too, you know, thrilled with what he has become as a player. They got Brandon Graham coming back, but he's a 34-year-old player coming off an Achilles injury, so I don't think you should expect too much. And then Josh Sweat is a good, solid player at defensive end, but, like, I don't think he really moves the needle for you. Ultimately, though, I think that the history would tell you that Howie Roseman is going to build through the trenches, so I wouldn't doubt that whether it's a Jermaine Johnson that falls to 15 or it's a George Karloftis from Purdue, someone in that vein, that they might be incredibly interested. But I actually think that how it's going to shake out is I think that the Eagles are probably going to go wide receiver with that first pick, the 15th overall selection. I think that you're probably looking at, again, if Jameson Williams is there, I would consider him. If Drake London is there, I would consider him. They're very different football players, but I think they bring an element to the offense that is both absent on the Eagles team. They don't have a player that, you know, Devonta Smith is a kind of instant separator type, can do multi-level things, but he's not a true burner like a Jameson Williams is, obviously. And Drake London, 6'4" plus, who has some yak ability. So I think that they both bring elements to the game that you don't have. So if the Eagles are able to get a wide receiver with their first round pick, I think the second first round pick, you go with whoever the best corner available is. So that could be Andrew Wood Jr. out of Clemson. That could be Trent McDuffie. Right now you have a really good corner at one side with Darius Slay. The opposite corner, Steven Nelson, was a starter last year who is now a free agent. So I don't know if they're really interested in making that return with him. But either way, if he is not returned, you have Zach McPherson ready to take the mantle at corner. And I don't think you want Zach McPherson being your second corner. So best corner available. Get a dynamic element at wide receiver. I think that's a pretty good draft for the Eagles.
Yeah, we're familiar with McDuffie out of Washington. He's a terrific player. Folks, he is Ryan Roberts, does a great job keeping us wired into the NFL draft and more. Again, online, risendraft.com. His Twitter handle, @risendraft, part of the Believe Network. Ryan, really appreciate the time. I know it's close. Great info and insight. Wishing you and yours well, and look forward to talking again down the road. But thanks a lot. Really appreciate it, Ryan.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. I appreciate you for having me on. It was a blast.
All right, take it easy.